Very poignant, the last post. Now, the First World War, or the Great War, began this month 100 years ago. In fact, Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria was assassinated a year ago last week, triggering events. It's thought that there were 16 million military and civilian deaths during World War I, including nearly 50,000 Irishmen, ranking it as one of the deadliest conflicts in human history. And the centenary this year has seen all manner of coverage on television and radio. In recent months, RT Radio 1 has been exploring Ireland's involvement in World War I. And if you're interested, you might like to attend the World War I Roadshow at Trinity College on Saturday week, the 12th of July, where RT Radio 1 have partnered with Trinity and the National College of Ireland to bring you a free day of events. Now, we'll put details of that on our website. And members of the public are invited to bring along letters, photos or medals from World War I. To have them catalogued by the National Library of Ireland. And there will be talks, theatre performances, cooking demonstrations, storytelling, music, as well as a special World War I themed recording of a Sunday miscellany programme. Now, someone who's very interested in World War I is our very own Richard Collins. You know him best for his observations on science and wildlife on our Friday show, and indeed he'll be back with us tomorrow. But Richard is also a bit of a history buff and is just back from a trip to northern France, where he visited many sites associated with World War I. So what was it like, Rich?
It was wonderful, Derek. I shouldn't be saying it's wonderful, but listening to Christy there, it made me think about this. I don't want to be dwelling too much on the dark side of the war. There's also a bright side to that First World War, terrible and all as it is. The lovely towns of Arras and Béthune and Lens and Loss and these places, they have all been lovingly restored and they are beautiful towns now. And it is a lovely place to go now. So this is triumph over adversity. So I went there to tour that area for 4 days last week. It was an extraordinary experience, very moving experience.
Why was it moving?
Well,
this all happened a long time ago.
Well, yes. If you take, we've gone to Iceland, and in Iceland, Iceland's one of the seismic hotspots of the world. There are hotspots in seismology, the Galapagos, the Azores, southern Italy, Vesuvius, all this sort of thing. And the same is true in wars. And the greatest hotspot, perhaps, is the region south of Calais, north of Paris, 200 kilometres north of Paris. This has seen war after war, conflict after conflict, right from Julius Caesar, 50 BC, right through the Hundred Years' War, Crécy, Agincourt, the Edward the Black Prince and Henry V and all that sort of medieval chivalry stuff, right through then into, and after the First World War, you had the Blitzkrieg, Hitler's invasion, the evacuation from Dunkirk, the firing of V1 and V2 rockets on England, and then the American-English advance eventually ending the war. So it's seen all of this, and no part of Europe during the First World War was so badly devastated as that little area around Arras. So that is the place I went to see this time.
And what did you see?
Well, there was a famous battle in Arras in 1917, known as the Battle of Arras. Now, they say of the First World War that it was a case of lions led by asses, and their generals were supposed to be asses. But in the Battle of Arras made me wonder if this is really so. There was an extraordinary plan in Arras. The generals decided that they would... let me go back a little bit. Back in the 12th century, there were there were quarries under Arras, chalk quarries, limestone, and a network of tunnels and chambers existed under the city. And the generals hit on the idea that if they were to develop that, they could use it as a weapon. So they brought in Maori miners, and people from Yorkshire who were too small for the army. The army insisted on you being a certain height, and Yorkshire miners and Maoris went in and they redug out those tunnels under the city of Arras and constructed an alternative town under it, of chambers running for 20 kilometres, with a hospital with 700 beds in it, and tram tracks laid to push wagons along, and a primitive electric generator. Now, you can go and see this now. You can go, well, part of it, you can go down now and be taken by guides through some of this area. Now, in 1917, 24,000 men accumulated down there, a larger number living under the ground than were in the city before war broke out. An extraordinary number of people. And it's an awful thought, really, when you're down there, to think that you would live down that place. There were no latrines. There were buckets placed at relevant places around. There would be buckets. Water was in short supply. For instance, if you washed, there would be 12 men washing in the same basin. Oddly, the best place to be would be the 12th man, because the water was so cold that by the time you were, if you were the 12th person, it would have been warmed up by your predecessors, Derek. Mm. So that's a nice thought, isn't it?
And everything else passed on by your predecessors, I don't
Well, everything else passed on. We have to eat rough and smooth. But thinking of it down there, getting a sense of it down there was very vivid. Well, then on the 9th of April, 1917, the burst, the opening was made, and the 24,000 troops burst out of there. They had to leave their great coats behind on the orders of the generals, because it would take so long to get through the exit if they had their great coats on. But there was a downside to that, because it was snowing outside. So onto the dreadful things that would happen above was added the freezing cold of the fog of the day. So that was an extraordinary experience to see that. And of course, vast numbers of 170,000 men were lost on the British side alone. I forget the exact figure, something like that, in the Battle of Arras. But it was a good plan, because they almost brought it off. They lashed through the German trenches. There was a description by some of the guides. Some of the German soldiers were just getting up. They had no boots on. They were pulling out of bed and found English soldiers standing over them. Fellas walked to the trenches where smoking cigarettes in some places, but in others they were machine gunned down. Whole companies were wiped out. But the interesting thing was that this plan worked very well. They pushed through several trenches, but then the generals made a mistake. They decided to stop and regroup and rest. And of course that was a fatal decision, because the Germans had a chance to get their act together and hold the line. And the German generals admitted afterwards that had the British pushed through, they would have broken through the lines into the open country behind, and then it would become a war of movement and the Germans would have been
defeated. Isn't Arras famous for rats?
Yes, that you're right. The symbol of the town is the rat. Rat in French sounds like Arras. That might be the origin of it, although they pronounce, oddly in French, they pronounce the S in Arras. Another possibility is this was a famous grain store area in the Middle Ages, so there would have been lots of rats there then. But the symbol, oddly enough, of this city is the rat, which in modern times is curiously appropriate, considering that it was in tunnels rats spend their lives underground. It was in the tunnels that this great...
Presumably it's the Rattus Norvegicus. Is that the brown rat?
Yes, it is the brown rat that came in the 17th century. It's a strange image. It's odd that you should bring that up, because looking at it with a zoological hat on you, as I do to some extent, I think of these are men who hurl themselves to their deaths out of these trenches. You've got 9 million men killed doing that. How could they do it? How on earth could people plunge to death like that? And you think of parallels in nature, and of course you have things like lemmings embarking on huge migrations, and there's a description by Pallas of the rats. This comes into my mind first as you raise it. Pallas describes the rats crossing the Volga in eastern in Russia back in the 17th century, the great invasion of rats of Europe in the 18th century, spreading everywhere and to Ireland as well. So it's an interesting image that you raised there.
Now, what was the most moving place you went to on your trip?
Oh, yes. Well, I went to all kinds of cemeteries, huge cemeteries. The biggest German cemetery in France is near there. And also, but the Vimy Memorial, I think, must be the
What's
one.
What's that?
Well, Vimy is a ridge that was taken in the Battle of Arras in 1917 by the Canadians. The Canadians burst forth out of tunnels and assaulted this ridge and took it. They lost 4,000 men that day. But there is a magnificent memorial on top of Vimy Ridge, gleaming white. It's something like 48 metres high, resting on something like 11,000 tons of concrete, with statuary erected by Canadian sculpture. And it is a beautiful, very evocative memorial. You would be deeply moved to be there. I think you couldn't but be, you know, the effect this place has on you. It's on top of a ridge. You can see it for miles around. And they have all kinds of Canadian trees and plants and things planted there. And a little bit away, there are areas cordoned off where you can't go because there may still be unexploded shells in the ground. And you see the outlines of the trenches. So I think Vimy is very special. The cemeteries have a terrible effect on you as well, real weepy effect, the huge French cemetery. They are very moving places, I must say.
Did you go to Loss? Because I know that's on the World War tourist map.
Well,
Loss.
That's the one I didn't actually get to. Oh. I didn't get as far as Loss, because that's famous for our good friend Rudyard Kipling, who that's a very poignant story. It's very hard to grasp, I think. This is the difficulty with great wars like that. You can't grasp 50,000 men being killed at the Battle of the Somme on the first day. You can't grasp that. It's too big. Our minds can't deal with it. But individual stories, these do have an effect. Now, Rudyard Kipling, who I think was the youngest poet or laureate for literature in the Nobel laureate for literature, he had a son, an only son, Jack. And Jack was short-sighted. So he pulled strings, being a famous man, he pulled strings to get his son Jack into the army. And he succeeded. He got him into the Irish Guards. But at Loss in 1915, his son was killed. Well, he disappeared. There was a description of him, with his face half blown off in terrible pain and so forth. But his son went missing at that battle. And of course, Kipling and his wife were devastated. And you can imagine why they were, having pulled strings to get their only son into the army, that this should be the final tragedy. He wrote a famous epitaph. It ran something like, "If anyone question why we did, tell them because our, no, why we died. If anyone question why we died, tell them it's because our fathers lied." And of course, his own lies to the army and so on to get his son in were responsible in the end for his son's death. It's a very poignant. The body was found, indeed, a second lieutenant's body was found, but it was something like 2 miles from where the son Jack had disappeared. So whether it was, and also it was in the wrong livery, the wrong uniform. It was the uniform of a second lieutenant, whereas he had become a first lieutenant by then. So there's still doubt as to whether Jack Rutledge or Jack was ever found, in fact. But it's a very poignant story and one that always stays with me. It's one that is kind of, this is repeated millions of times over in this terrible war.
Well, we have a listen to the poem.
Have you news of my boy Jack? Not this tide. When do you think that he'll come back? Not with this wind blowing and this tide. Has anyone else had word of him? Not this tide. For what is sunk will hardly swim, not with this wind blowing and this tide. Oh dear, what comfort can I find? None this tide nor any tide. Except he did not shame his kind. Not even with that wind blowing and that tide. Then hold your head up, all the more this tide and every tide. Because he was the sun, you bore. And gave to that wind blowing and that tide.
That's the voice of David Haig. Very moving stuff. Who was Sister McCarthy from Cork, Richard?
That I would love to know.
Yes,
that I would love to know. Because in Béthune, a guide was... Béthune. Béthune is a beautiful town. It was totally obliterated during the First World War, but they've rebuilt it. And it's a stunning square there in the Belfry. But this lady was talking about the war there. And she mentioned a Sister McCarthy, whom she said was a Franciscan from Cork, who was decorated. So I said, well, that's a beauty. I'll look that up when I go home. But I tried to find information about her on the internet and places, and I could find nothing. So if anyone out there knows who this lady was, it would be very interesting to find out.
And she was decorated by who and for what?
Oh, for looking after troops in that area, in the field hospitals. She was a nurse, I gather. And she, that's what I gathered from this particular spiel, but I didn't want to arrest the guide and start talking and disrupt her flow by going into it in any great depth. So that is the story of her, but I'd love to know who she was.
So if anybody knows anything about a Sister McCarthy from Cork, and why she is so important, please get in touch. Email mooney@rte.ie. Richard, thank you very much indeed. We'll see you tomorrow on Mooney Goes Wild, and more details about RTE Radio 1's contribution and commemoration of the First World War, the Great War, found on our website, rte.ie/Mooney.
RTE Radio 1.
The World War One Roadshow takes place in Trinity College Dublin on Saturday, July the 12th. RTE Radio 1's Sunday Miscellany will be there live, with new contributions written specially for the event. If you would like to be part of the audience, reserve your seat at rte.ie/radio1/Sunday Miscellany. World War One on RTE. Brought to you by RTE Radio 1 in association with Trinity College Dublin and the National Library of Ireland.